Okay, so we've voted not to add a standard setting project to the work plan, so now we'll move on to talking about the wording of the tentative agenda decision. Petrina, shall I hand over to you first and you can talk about what you've heard already, and then I'll open it up for further comments?
Yes. So if we turn to pages, sort of starting from page 16, where we've got the proposed wording of the tentative agenda decision, I've heard a couple of things. Maybe one that at least I personally think would be an improvement is sort of Bob's suggestion that maybe we just add in a bit of something that says we are actually, you know, stepping through sort of paragraph 99 of IFRS 16. So one thing I was maybe going to suggest there, if we look at the top of page 17, in that first bullet A, the last sentence there talks about the transaction is therefore a sale and leaseback transaction as described in paragraph 98 of IFRS 16. I would go full stop, and then we could refer in and say, because the transfer of the building satisfies the requirements in IFRS 15 to be accounted for as a sale, the requirements applicable to the transaction are in a paragraph 100 of IFRS 16. Mm. So hopefully that would make the link to say you have assessed the requirements in IFRS 15, and therefore the applicable requirements in this case is a paragraph 100 of IFRS 16, which links through then to the next bullets that refer directly into 100A. I think that was the main thing that I had from the discussion. There was just one other comment that we had in advance of the meeting that at least we were going to add as well, is that a couple of people pointed out that in our fact pattern that we set out in the submission, the fact pattern actually says the subsidiary was established some time ago and holds only one asset. So I think it would be helpful if we just reflect that properly. So in the first bullet A on page 16, we were potentially going to just make the fact pattern clear to say the subsidiary was established some time ago and holds only one asset.
Okay. Lisa?
Yeah, so to what Katrina was recommending, to me I find that about the references to the 15 analysis and the derecognition to be confusing, because in the conversation that we were having amongst everyone, I thought in general everyone said that it was quite clear that the loss of control happened when the shares were transferred under IFRS 10, so really that in essence you don't have to do the derecognition.
I think formally you do have to do both.
Do both.
In this fact pattern, I don't think any of us could imagine why you'd get a different answer, but I think technically speaking, you do need to do both, and I think we're all a bit wary of situations where it might not be quite so vanilla as the fact pattern, and we don't want people to forget.
Which, yeah I mean, that's true.
Bertrand, I didn't notice your comment earlier. Did you want to come in?
Thank you, Sue. Actually, my previous comments was on the previous discussion, but it was maybe an anticipation of our current discussion, so it's not a problem. Okay. I quite liked Renata's suggestion to specifically mention paragraph B9. 97 of IFRS 10 in the tentative agenda decision, because I think effectively it explains a bit better why you do not do a two-step approach just in that way, but effectively what you said in our previous discussion, Sue, that you are considering things all together. So effectively, paragraph B97 of IFRS 10 is quoted in the tentative agenda decision, but maybe I would have made an explicit reference to it, as Renata suggested in our previous discussion.
Okay. John?
Yes, just a question for Petrina regarding the suggested change to the wording. You mentioned noting that the subsidiary had been formed some time ago. Why do you think that addition would be necessary? The only reason I ask is I worry as soon as we introduce a fact, which is a bit more specific, it may communicate or intend that it may convey that if the subsidiary is newly formed, it could lead to a different outcome, which wasn't really part of the debate, at least today, or discussion today. So I was curious why you were suggesting to add that.
So I will explain, John, and then, by the way, up to the committee to decide. It was an embedded part of, I suppose, the fact pattern that's in the submission, in a sense. And in advance of the meeting, a couple of committee members, I suppose, just noted that. And there was a thought that if perhaps the fact pattern were such that the subsidiary, the corporate wrapper piece, the legal entity piece, had never existed before the transaction and potentially just got created as part of this transaction, it may make a slight difference in how you step through the analysis. Not necessarily a difference in the ultimate conclusion, but it might make a difference in how you step through the analysis. So there were two pieces there. One was just to maybe reflect what was put in the submission a bit more clearly, but because it may have an effect just in that case if, as I say, the legal entity structure was set up just as an embedded part of this transaction.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Carsten?
Thanks. So, I basically have two comments. One is the suggestion I made earlier, which is that I think it would be quite helpful because the agenda decision specifically refers to paragraph 98 of, to paragraph B98 in IFRS 10, that it would be helpful to clarify why B98D doesn't apply. And perhaps we could just say, that IFRS 16 contains the more specific and relevant guidance with regard to gain recognition. The other comment I would have is on the paragraph before that, I think that Patrina was referring to, where it says, in the transaction described in the request, the entity, and then the second sentence says, the transaction results in the entity losing control of the subsidiary and consequently control of the building. So in that sentence, I would like to suggest to delete the word consequently. I think, the fact pattern just says the entity loses control of the building. And I'm not sure I would agree that losing control of the building is a consequence of losing control of the entity. I think I mentioned earlier that you may have situations, other fact patterns where you are lose control of the building because there are different requirements in IFRS 15, especially around purchase options and so on. So my suggestion would be to delete the word consequently in that sentence.
I think that makes sense. I think it's also consistent with being clear that you need to sort of think about the 10 derecognition and that 15 point as well. So I think that suggestion makes sense. Young Soo?
Yes, I have just one comment. My comment is about the title of the agenda decision. In the agenda decision, we use the term corporate wrapper, and I'm not quite sure whether we really need that term, because as far as I remember, corporate wrapper is something that has been designed specifically for tax purpose. And we are not analyzing anything about tax purpose in our analysis. What we did just the analysis of the sales of a subsidiary with an asset and lease back the asset. So what we analyzed and what the title seems to be a little bit different. So I think we have to change corporate wrapper with some other expressions. That's my suggestion.
I think that's a good suggestion too, Young. So I think corporate wrapper, it might not be widely understood either. So I think avoiding that term is probably sensible. Jim?
I'd like to make a suggestion that a sentence on page 10, paragraph 29, should help understanding the logic of our decisions, which is the sentence I addressed earlier. Parent entity P receives cash and a lease as consideration for the transaction. I would like this sentence to be somewhere on page 17, after the sentence, consequently, the committee concluded that in the transaction described in the request, the entity received a cash and a lease. So following this sentence, we apply this paragraph and we apply this paragraph 25 and the A and B. So I think that makes the logic much easier for the readers to understand. If we cut it into two pieces or two steps, that will make the whole argument back, the 10th, the 15th, and the 16th. If we consider this transaction as one piece, that's one deal. We sold a entity and together with a lease contract, that makes the whole logic tighter, I think. So that's my logic to understand the whole suggestions to make it one piece. So if we could build this sentence into the decisions, that should help.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Bob?
Yeah, thanks. So I had previously provided the staff with some edits, suggested edits on the TAD, the tentative agenda decision, in which I, Carsten already made my point and wanted to eliminate the consequently, and it sounds like that's where we're going. So comments already been addressed.
Okay, thanks, Bob. Brian?
Yeah, thanks. A couple of points. Firstly, a slightly different version of Lisa's point. I wonder if, given the discussion we've had, I wonder if it would be helpful fairly near the beginning of the agenda decision to say explicitly that the transaction is not in the scope of IFRS 15, because that seemed to be a point of confusion for some people. So I think an explicit statement of that. I also had a comment about the title of the agenda decision. So I think we've agreed not to refer to the corporate wrapper, and I assume the reference for future generations would be to IFRS 16 and also IFRS 10 in the title. Just a couple of comments on some of the other suggested amendments. So I know Carsten, before and after the break, suggested that we introduce IAS 8 type language in order to explain why the gain is being calculated in accordance with IFRS 16. I guess at one level, it's never wrong to refer to IAS 8, but I wonder if the point is largely covered in a slightly different way. In the paragraph beginning, in the transaction described in the request, the entity, and then there's an A and B, and point A is describing why the transaction is within, why it is a sale and leaseback and therefore in the scope of IFRS 16. So I wonder whether we need the necessarily need the additional language saying that the gain will be calculated in accordance with IFRS 16. I mean, it wouldn't be wrong to have it, but we would, might slightly be over-determining the answer. So that was one thought. And the other comment, and I'm sorry to feedback to people who are making good suggestions, but the idea that we would say explicitly that within the agenda decision that the lease is consideration for the sale. Again, I just had a bit of a reservation about that, because presumably as time goes by, it's entirely possible that the seller lessee is going to be making lease payments. So there is there's more than one amount of consideration kicking around in this fact pattern. And although it's not explicitly discussed in the fact pattern or the agenda decision, there'll be versions of this that have an off-market element in one part of it, and you have to adjust. So I just wonder whether specifically referring to the lease as being consideration for the disposal, you know, is it absolutely necessary, or can there just be the current, more neutral description of the fact pattern?
Can I just say one comment to one of Brian's recommendations? And this is kind of my concern, and where to me it brought me around this whole discussion about the IFRS 15 in the staff paper, is that if you say, you know, within this decision, tentative decision, that IFRS 15 is not in scope, then you look on page 16 in part C, says the transfer of the building satisfies the requirements of IFRS 15 revenue contract. So it's like, okay, how can you say it's not in scope when you clearly are looking at
Whereas I would say that IFRS 16 has a cross-reference to a specific paragraph of 15, and that doesn't put you in the scope of 15. It just tells you you apply that test in 15.
I think, yeah, I think that this is going to be an important thing to try and make clear in the agenda decision, not least so people can comment on it. Mm. So I wonder whether, if we do say explicitly that you're not in the scope of 15, but when you make the addition, Petrina, that you've suggested to, I think it was up near A on page 17, to yep. say explicitly that you've met the requirements in 15, yep. 15, that it's very clear that that's saying in accordance with IFRS 16 paragraph blah blah. So it's clear yes, that it's coming from the 16 application.
Exactly. I'll direct. I think 15. That was Bob's yeah. suggestion that we directly refer into paragraph 99 of IFRS 16. Yeah.
Mary,
Sue, on,
I'm looking at you.
But yeah. Yes. Sue, on that point, I think if you're looking at a hard copy, page 17, the paragraph that will no longer begin consequently, the instruction to apply paragraph B97 to 99 of IFRS, it's paragraph 99 of IFRS 16. I think... if at some point when you're referencing 16, you can say that you applied this, and it may just, that may be, rather than Brian up front, a place to make an observation that the committee noted that applying the requirement in 16 mm-hmm. to test whether the performance obligation has been satisfied does not put it in the scope of 15.
Yes.
I think the thing that I just this is where Petrina will wish that I was close enough to kick. So this is the disadvantage of social distancing, Petrina. I think the elephant in the room is whether or not you've met the requirements in 98D by doing this analysis here, right? And you're right, Brian, that we sort of obliquely refer to it by talking about the fact that we're accounting for a transfer of the loss of control. And also, I think we sort of obliquely refer to it by being specific in the second paragraph B on page 17 that only the amount of any gain that relates to the rights transferred is what's recognised. But I wonder, this is where Petrina might want to kick me, whether we should say in brackets there rather than the amount, than the gain recognised in accordance with 98D of IFRS 10, just to be explicit on that so people can react to that. You can tell by the look on her face she doesn't like it.
I'm thinking about it.
Because otherwise it's very subtle, which sort of isn't... It's good and bad to be subtle, you know?
Yeah. I suppose what we're not subtle about... So it is subtle, I agree, because what we're not subtle about is that we quote the gain requirements from paragraph 100A of IFRS 16. So we kind of say, so in that, you know, second bullet B, we're very explicit about quoting the gain requirements in 100A. So I suppose you could call that subtle or not subtle, because we're not subtle about that, but then, you know, we don't mention...
The alternative would be that we make an observation at the end of the analysis that would say, as a consequence, the gain recognised on the transaction reflects 100A. So we're saying at the end, you know, this is the sum, this is the net effect of everything we've done.
Yeah.
I just feel like it might be better to, given that we need to be very careful with the due process handbook, particularly having just been updated, not to add or change requirements in IFRS standards, we need to, I think, be clear enough that people have got the opportunity to comment on it.
I think we can include that as a statement that then the gain recognised on the transaction reflects.
Okay, so I'm going to try and summarise what I think the main suggested changes are from the draft, and Petrina, if you could listen, then you can pick me up. So we're going to change the title to remove the reference to corporate wrapper and to include a reference to both to IFRS 16 and IFRS 10. You're suggesting that you're going to make it clear in the fact pattern that the subsidiary was established some time before the transaction. you were going to make an addition on page 17 up in part A to make it specific that you need to do the test which is contained in 16 that refers to 15. But by being clear that we're not in the scope of 15, but the test comes from there. And we were going to make a comment at the end of the consequently discussion there about to say that as a consequence, the overall gain recognised on the transaction reflects 100A of IFRS 16.
Yep.
Are those the main ones?
That's, and we just did one other consequently at the top of page 17 that
Sorry,
we were going
that's
to
That's important
remove.
Too. And deleting the word consequently before consequently control of the building in our first paragraph A at the top of page 17. I think that was what I heard. With that, could I get a show of hands from the committee on who supports the tentative agenda decision with those amendments? Okay, thank you. Okay, as a reward for good behaviour, you're going to get to discuss deferred tax.
That was the easy one.
I've got nobody on my screen because something weird's happening here. So,
Gustavo.
Is Gustavo there? Why can't I say Gustavo? Oh, there's Gustavo. He's a small box in the bottom. There you are. Okay, Gustavo, can I hand over to you, the IS-12 man, to introduce the next set of papers, please?